This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, welcome in. It's the Stick and Hack Show. That's Stick over there. I'm Hack, and we are happy to have you on the program this week as we are episode two here of the most sophisticated golf show in the free world. That is what that's what the critics are calling it, Mike.
Are they?
Check it out. Yeah. Okay. USA Today, Rolling Stone, and many others. Nobody in the golf world. Nobody in the golf space, but everybody else said it's the most sophisticated and brilliant golf show in the free world. So that is what we're going to go with.
Okay. We'll take it.
So, Mike, the first up is always the most important part of any show, right? The first thing you talk about. And I figured we might as well talk about our villain, Ian Poulter, right off the bat here.
Okay.
Now, some people don't love Ian. Some people don't even know who he is or care, except every 2 years for the Ryder Cup when he's pounding his chest and he's being abrasive and annoying to the Americans. Then we all hate him, but then we don't think about him again.
Right.
Correct? But I do want to hear your thoughts. So at the St. Jude Classic over the weekend, at his WGC event, he had a fan kicked out for heckling him.
Yep.
Him specifically. Like some guy, some knucklehead, was talking and yelling at him, and he had him removed.
Right.
People were up in arms saying that he overreacted. He's a jerk. There's no reason for that. Just let the guy be the guy. He was probably saying mashed potatoes or something ridiculous, and he should have been eliminated immediately.
Well, if he would have known that Ian hates mashed potatoes, then maybe that would have saved him.
Right. It would have. He would have made smarter choices in his heckling.
Yeah.
Is that a problem? Is that a big deal that Ian Poulter kicked somebody out?
I feel like I've noticed in the last few years, the fans have started to get louder and louder on tour. And I think it's getting to a point where guys are just, they've had enough and they're just not going to put up with it anymore. So I don't have a problem with it. It doesn't necessarily mean I like Ian Poulter anymore, but I understand why. I read the article that they put out on Golf Digest put out on it, and I think he was justified after what the guy said, and kind of it wasn't good-natured ribbing. No, it wasn't. It was kind of a constant heckle. And
but can you just imagine just at your workplace just being able to at any point you want just say, you know what, get out of here, and having some guy just take him out of the office or out of the meeting, because that's basically what happened. He's at work. Somebody annoyed him, and he said, hey, get out of here.
Well, I'd love to be able to do that sometimes.
See, when you say it that way, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But in the heat of the professional moment, we understand. So Ian Poulter is just like, hey, get this guy out of here, and he was. Now, if that was Tiger, if there was anybody else, it's not even a story, because it probably happens all the time. But Ian, who comes with this bravado and this brashness anyway, he was probably looked at as being a bit of a baby. The Evian Championship frustration. What's wrong?
What did you call it? It's Evian. What did you say?
Evian.
It's Evian.
Okay. Well, I have a cousin named Evian. No, her name is just Eve. It's not even a cousin. It's my niece.
Oh.
Now that I think about it, I'm wrong on all accounts. It doesn't matter. The LPGA tournament over the weekend, it was the fifth major. I do know that much.
Yep.
Is it the water?
Yes.
Well, what the hell? I don't know. My God, there's a Corn Fairy. Do you know what Corn Fairy is?
You are the host of the most sophisticated golf show in the planet.
Right. Free world.
Well, whatever.
Right. All right. So anyway, the water tournament at the LPGA.
Yeah.
Alexi Thompson, who missed the cut, who's one of the top stars in the LPGA and fantastic golfer, fantastic role model. She's awesome. And she's great for the game. But she made some disparaging comments to the course, or about the course and to the tournament, that it was not set up properly for any game, let alone her game. She missed the cut, and she was frustrated with it and thought it was ridiculous. And this has been going on for years at this tournament, that they make the course almost impossible for people to play. Now, she has since retracted those comments and said, I took my bad game and I took it out on the course, which we all do. Is that a big deal?
For her, yeah, probably, because I'm sure the retraction was spurred by her sponsors. But
what did she say? What did she say? Get her back out there.
Yeah, she, it happens. Everybody, any golfer, and especially any good golfer, you have a bad round and your frustrated. I'm sure somebody stuck a microphone in front of her face and she wasn't happy about the round she had. So she spoke her mind, and sometimes that's not the best idea, but, you know, people are going to speak their mind. I'd rather people speak their mind anyways, personally, but, right. The sponsors, I'm sure, didn't like it, and that's why she came out with the retraction. But.
Well, it's always tough for any golfer, any athlete, to blame a venue for their inability to
right.
move on in the tournament or whatever. But she does have a point, because there's a couple golfers in the LPGA that have not played that tournament in 4 or 5 years because of the course setup. What her point was is that you can hit a great shot, and it would end up being in a bad spot, which she didn't understand.
Yep.
And they do that on purpose, perhaps, or it's just the way the course is set up.
Yeah, I think the comment she made was she had 3 or 4 times she hit it dead in the middle of the fairway and she missed the fairway.
Right. And I can't, and that's, but, as a golfer.
Which, I mean, I get that. I understand getting frustrated, but everybody's dealing with the same conditions out there. So, I mean, she's not going to get anybody's sympathy,
right?
At least not her. Fellow players.
But. Speaking of sympathy, you got JB Holmes and Brooks Koepka feuding after the Open.
Yes,
all about slow play. So Koepka came out, and you like people who speak their mind. And as of late, there have been a lot of golfers that have not held back in the press or in the media about how they feel about a course, about the game, about the setup, other players, and Brooks, who has already for some reason has this moniker of being kind of a tough ass and kind of a jerk, winner, but a bit of a jerk. I doubt he is, but on the course he had that mentality, and he has blasted JB Holmes for the slowest play in America, which I can attest is not, because I've seen the slowest play in America. JB Holmes, however, is incredibly slow. And it's probably a discussion point for us at some point, just on slow play and how to deal with that as a hack or a stick. But Brooks is saying basically to JB, hey, and to all of us, 5.5, 6 hour rounds are insane. What the hell is, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
And he was blaming one guy.
Well, slow play on the PGA Tour is a problem in general, in my opinion. And I think the PGA Tour talks all the time how they want to improve and they want to do things to, you know, speed up play, but you don't ever see them ever penalize anybody. I mean, they might once in a while, but it's never somebody that's somebody they care about or somebody up at the top of the leaderboard. So I don't know.
I can't even imagine what that would look like as a penalty. For someone to come out, and I know it happens.
Well, they warn them. They'll put them on a clock, and then I think they get they put them on the clock, and then I think they get 2 or 3 holes to catch up. And if they don't, then they'll penalize them. But
did they penalize the whole group?
Yeah, I think, I believe they do. Yeah,
because that would be even worse. I mean, unless you can pinpoint, like they could pinpoint JB Holmes as a slow player.
Yeah, they could.
There's a video of him putting, and I mean it was a 2-footer. Maybe. I mean, it was a tap in. And I don't know if he was doing it to showcase that I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
But it's actually on stickandhack.com. We have an article specifically about slow play, and that Twitter video of him putting this 2-footer and taking 38 to 40 seconds. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's bad. And the worst part is, and Koepka talked about this in his comments, is he doesn't go into his pre-shot routine until he is up. So other guys up there, you know, getting his yardage, getting ready to hit, conversing with his caddy. JB doesn't do any of that until that guy's done. Now he starts in his pre-shot routine, which he should be doing that while that guy's in his pre-shot routine.
So those guys that play on Saturday and you hear the pro or the starter tell you ready golf.
Yeah.
That means that you hit whenever you're ready. And that you're kind of throwing out the who's up, you know, who's further back, whose turn. You kind of wait that out, or you ignore that, and you just hit whenever you're ready.
Yep.
That does speed up the game. It also, though, it causes some issues internally with some guys because they're like, you know, they're trying to figure out their deal, and then you're over there hitting. It's a weird situation sometimes within a foursome, especially if you don't know the guys and you haven't already agreed to play Ready Golf.
Yeah.
However, the stick mentality, I'm surprised, isn't, hey, these guys are getting paid millions of dollars. They've got sponsorships on the line. This is their job. This is their profession. They are professional athletes. Why wouldn't they take as much time as they need to hit the best shot?
That may be the way they feel, but from me as a low handicap,
call it what it is. I mean, that's the name of the show is Stick and Hack. I don't know why
I'm embracing it.
You should. It's about time.
Okay,
I've embraced Hack.
Fine.
Thank you. What was your point?
As a stick.
God, that is brazen. You are very conceited.
Hey, I'm going to throw it out there then. As a stick, I hate slow play. I mean, there's no reason I understand the money on the line, but you can go through the same pre-shot routine every time and still play Ready Golf. It's not that hard. It really isn't. Like, I get guys will make that comment, but to me, it's a cop out.
Well,
it's just a cop out because they've got a routine and they think they're right. And that's it, in my opinion. But, there's things that, in my opinion, the tour can do to supersede that. And if they just start enforcing it more and being more, I would say consistent on enforcing it, I think you would see play speed up.
What do you think happens first? A shot clock in high school basketball or a shot clock and true shot clock in golf? Which happens first?
Oh, it's not even close. It'll be high school basketball before the PGA Tour. I'm under no illusion that the PGA Tour is going to listen to the Stick and Hack podcast.
Hey, you watch your mouth, Mike. Hey, you don't know. You don't know.
Someday.
And if they are, by God, we love you guys.
Someday. We love you, PGA Tour.
We love the LPGA. We talked about both of you today. Okay, we're giving equal time. You're welcome.
Yes.
All right, the conversation. This is something that I've been excited to talk to you about because I think we have very different opinions on this topic. For the first time ever, we might have a debate here that is worth listening to.
One for two.
Yeah, we'll try. Who the hell knows? All right, what makes a great golf course? Or what makes a golf course great? So for you, what do you want in a golf course? What would you plump down $150, $200 for a round, even, you know, $75 to $100,
yeah,
if it's not your home course, where you say, I got to play that course?
Yeah.
What is it for you?
To me, from a design perspective, I like to see a course that's challenging but fair and not not too much as far as like tricks and the way it's set up.
So like gimmicky holes?
I don't like gimmicky holes.
Right. I don't think anybody does.
I understand them sometimes, but for the most part, I like a course to be one where you look at it and you go, okay, I can play it here. Or, you know, I don't like courses where you get up there and, you know, you're hitting a blind shot, you know, to a target.
Right.
I don't like courses like that personally. A lot of guys that I know that are low handicaps aren't particularly fond of them either.
So you like to see things as they are right in front of you, so what do you like? So you've explained what you don't like. You don't like gimmicky holes.
I'm always looking for
blind shots.
I love to know that the turf's going to be fantastic. You're going to have great fairways, great greens that are going to roll consistently. I like greens that are a little bit of a challenge from the perspective of you may need to look at the putt from more than one side to really get the see what the break's going to do. I think those are always those to me. That's a challenge and it's fun to be able to read the greens and then kind of see the different angles because, like Pete Dye specifically, a lot of his greens I always find I have to look at both sides of the hole. Because he's always been so good at nuance in the breaks of the green that you'll look at it from one side and it'll look like it's going to go one way and you look at the other and it may actually go another.
And most hacks, speaking from this side of the board, we don't look at both sides. We'll be lucky if we look at one side. Okay, if we do any more than just kind of crouch down and go, yep, goes right. So for me, the greens and the type of grass, I know that different types of grass affect the ball flight. They affect the how it grabs your club and all that. I do know that that happens.
Yeah.
I just don't care. You know? Now, I'm sure you do.
I mean, I do.
So, because you know that you're going to need to hit a different club.
Yeah.
And you also know that how it reacts on that turf is different than how it reacts in the Midwest is how it is different than how it reacts in the West. So you like greens that roll true, and you like a challenging setup. So for you, what is a challenging setup? But more bunkers, smaller greens.
I like it. I like a course that. One thing, and this is one thing about course design that I think is overlooked, is when you're building enough tee boxes that it allows multiple levels of golfer to be able to enjoy the course. And if you do that, you're also placing bunkers and different obstacles that are going to be in the flight pattern of those different skill levels. And still be something where, all right, I've got a bunker on the right. I know I can't fly it, so I know I have to play it out to the left, that type of thing.
That's what's crazy to me.
So
when I think about that, because I don't do the math. You know, I don't think, okay, it's 250 to that bunker on the left,
yep,
and there's a bunker 230 on the right,
yep,
but there's a pretty good chance I hit it 245 right down the middle. Because that's just what I do.
Sure.
But then, so I don't even think about, okay, how do I meticulously kind of plot myself around these holes, around these courses? So that's the key difference between what I look at in a golf course. I look at vistas. Okay. What do I see? Okay. What's around me? What's the environment? Yeah. Are there mountains? Is it against some water? Are there trees? Is there, I'm serious. That's what is exciting to me.
Very sophisticated of you.
That is what is very exciting to me for a golf course, is that it just feels nice when you're playing it.
I love all those things too. But they're like, you know, they're like last on the list.
Okay. So you don't like them.
I like them. They're just not like the first thing I care.
So we're flipped because the, undulation of the greens.
Yeah.
I could care less about. Are you taking a protractor out there and trying to figure out the thing? Somebody did. I think that
one day I'll convince you otherwise.
Well, okay. Well, that'll be a fun day.
Probably not.
It'll be a fun day. What I do think is awesome about golf course design is the forethought when it's just land. Now that part I think is cool.
Yeah.
When it's just flat land, or it's rolling, or it's
dunes,
Sand Valley up in Wisconsin. They've got two courses up there going to a third, and it just was like trails in this kind of wasteland of sand dunes and in the middle of Wisconsin. And somebody looked out there and said, wow, this could be a golf course. Now that is awesome to me. And I'm thinking that somebody could see all that and then design and construct it in a way where it's challenging. If you're playing both courses, they're two very different courses and they're literally right next to each other.
Yeah.
That part's pretty cool. And I like that.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's all I like.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all.
The rest of the time I want holes on water, not, mountains in the background.
Yeah.
I played in Mexico one time and that was.
I've not played in Mexico.
Oh, I'm better than you then. Interesting.
Yeah, clearly.
I played in Mexico one time and it was awesome because it was huge elevation changes. That's something I like about golf courses.
Oh.
If you ask me, what do I love about golf courses? Mm-hmm. Elevation changes.
Oh, okay.
Colorado has a bunch of elevation changes in their courses. Yep. Awesome. Yep. Mexico has them.
Yep.
Indiana, not so much.
Yeah, that's like the 12-year-old mentality.
Is it really?
It is a little bit.
To have elevation changes in your
kids like to stand up on high places and like throw things off them.
Yeah, that's me.
I see.
So we're spot on. So you get it then.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I can't believe how quickly you've gotten me. Okay. I have eating habits of a 13-year-old boy.
Ooh.
All right. Well, that never changed.
Okay.
And I like to throw things off buildings and I just, not buildings. I'm not throwing rocks off buildings.
Cliffs.
Yeah, cliffs.
Yeah.
And I like to watch that whole thing happen.
Vistas.
Vistas. I like vistas,
yes.
Mike. Thank you. You get it. You're finally getting it.
Okay.
All right. We move on to the clubhouse. What really happens at a putting, on the putting green at a tournament? At an LPGA or PGA tournament?
Yeah.
I think our listeners would be surprised to know and understand that this is their job. They're independent contractors. They are out there for themselves, and it's not just tournament money and weekend golf money they're making. They're making millions of dollars in some cases on their side deals, and those come from the putting green.
Right.
During tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. They, you know, those guys are out there. It may look like they're just, you know, signing autographs and having a good old time, but, you know, you're always going to see people they're talking to and having conversations with, and those are business deals that they're working on, and they're, you know, sponsors that they have obligations to, and are, entertaining, for the week while, you know, they're in town. And, yeah, it's a job. It's a full-time job for those guys. It's not just, hey, I'm going to go out and play golf today.
And that's what people think.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, but there's a lot more to it.
Play golf for a living? Yeah. Hell yeah. Sign me up. Yeah. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Well, because after Sunday's round, you get on a plane and you fly to the next round that doesn't start until Thursday, but you have to be there Monday for a photo shoot with two of the sponsors, the main sponsors of that tournament. But they're always looking for ways to improve their media empire, their own company. So if it's Ricky Fowler Inc., he is Ricky Fowler Inc.
Yep.
He has to meet with Puma. He has to meet with his other sponsors. He has to meet with reps from the local area. He's got to do a radio show. God forbid he end up doing a podcast like Stick and Hack.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that at Ricky Fowler?
Ricky. Come on, baby.
Rick, just do something for us, please, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not – just wear our hat once and be on our show once. That's literally all we're asking.
Well, the problem is I don't think we have a flat bill yet, do we?
No, it's not flat enough.
Oh, okay.
If we do, it's not flat.
We just got to get a flat bill.
Flat enough. We'll call it the Ricky.
All right, perfect.
So you would be surprised to know that many hundreds of thousands of dollars are made between Monday morning and Thursday morning at these tournaments.
Yeah.
Yes, they're there to practice, but if you watch for 6-7 hours, these guys are out there on the range or on the putting green, they're not just hitting balls. They're not working on their swing the entire time.
Right.
They are trying to boost their own corporations and their own companies, whatever that may look like.
Yep, for sure. I mean, and you know, the thing I think about with that, and that really started, if you think about it, with Arnold Palmer. He really kind of set that bar way back in the, you know, 60s and 70s when he was creating his own brand. And you look at it today, what it is, it's amazing how much he was able to grow his own personal brand. And that was like, he was like a pioneer in that.
Oh, yeah.
He was like the first one to really like promote himself. You know, he became a pilot and was flying himself all around the country because it was easier for him to do business deals.
And Phil does that now.
Yeah. It's like, that's like the standard.
Yeah.
Now. They're all flying private jets and, you know.
And then it went to Greg Norman. Norman was probably the second most prolific brand ambassador of himself, and then got into golf course design and all of these things. Yeah. So it was Arnie and then Jack to a degree, but Jack was still winning tournaments and was still playing golf.
Yeah.
And then it was Greg Norman. And then of course Tiger, and he put that into a whole different stratosphere. Does the amount of success of the golfer make more difference in that those meetings and how important those meetings are to them? Or is it more important for someone like Ches Reavie or Matthew Wolf? Some of these, Ches has been on the tour for 10 or 11 years, but he just won. Matt is new to the tour. What's most important at that time?
I think they're definitely more important for those guys that are like first time winners, because that's like strike while the iron's hot. And they've really got to be able to get their name out there and get their brand out there to kind of take advantage of it. And hopefully get some momentum for themselves. The guys that are established, I think once they're established, it's probably a lot easier. Their agents are able to handle a lot more of it because they actually have an agent now.
Yeah.
I'm sure those guys, when they first go out there,
their high school buddy is their
agent or whatever. But
yeah,
obviously the guys that are coming up, they're much more important for them. The more established players, obviously Phil, Tiger. Guys have been out there doing it forever. At this point, their brand is what it is, and there's not much they're going to do to, well.
Well, we thought that until Phil had the button-up dress shirt. So we thought there wasn't anything else he could do.
Well, I shouldn't say that.
He blew that out of the water.
Tiger clearly did some damage to his brand at one point.
Tiger did. Yeah, Tiger did.
You know, even then, he obviously he's still doing fine.
Yeah, he's just fine. But then you see some of those guys that are playing every single weekend, and I would love to hear those stories. I'd love to honestly understand what that grind is like. Yeah. We all think, every person that has ever golfed thinks to themselves, wow, what an incredible job.
Yeah.
You know, baseball player, I love baseball. I think, my God, look at him. They're out there at 1 o'clock, you know, noon, 11 a.m., hitting BP, throwing the ball to kids. What a great day. They do that 162 days of the year. And then they're off for 3 months, and then they come back and do it again. Golf is year-round now. They got wraparound seasons, and then they have the wraparound of the wraparound. Once the FedEx Cup is done, you would think the season's over, but it's like NASCAR. Like, it just never ends.
Yeah, I've wondered about that lately, is at what point is it detrimental, I guess, to the game where those guys don't get a break? Does it affect them at some point?
I think it affects TV ratings.
It definitely does, because, obviously you see not all the best players play every week. I mean, because they just can't. They've got to take some weeks off. You know, we talked about last week, Tiger. He's only playing four or five times a year. Right. And
I played more this week.
Now, obviously, his is a little bit more complicated. But for most guys, man, if you're having to play year-round every week in a professional golf tournament, I just can't even imagine.
Well, and not only that, but they have to – they're in charge of their own transportation. Yeah. They're 1099 employees of their own. They don't work for the PGA. They don't work for the LPGA. These guys and girls – are out there grinding and playing. It's fascinating to me. And I honestly would like to do some sort of story on that, just to understand what that truly is like. And is it as glamorous as we think it might be?
Absolutely.
And I doubt it is.
We'll get to it at some point.
All right. Hack rule question. All right. So you blasted me last time with the hack rule question, and it was the highlight of the show, according to most people. When you call me a stone cold moron. So let's see if I do a better job this time.
It can't get any dumber.
It can't. Well, we'll see. Not here though. This one is a good one. Okay. I really thought, I thought long and hard about this, and I actually went a different direction as opposed to a rule question. I want to have a sportsmanship question with you. Okay. Now you are a stick. You're a great golfer. We've played golf together many times, and you're very polite. You give compliments to the hack, which is nice. Hey, great shot. Even if it wasn't awesome.
Yep.
If it's airborne,
hey. If
good
I know
on you.
If I know it's at the top of their ability, so to speak, I'm giving them an attaboy.
Good 4 foot putt, fella. all right. So, do you call somebody on an illegal drop or rules infraction as it's happening in tournament play or in some sort of money game where there's something on the line outside of your Wednesday night?
Yeah. Well, first off, you have to call it if you're going to call it as it happens. You can't wait.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes.
This sounds like this is set up, and it wasn't. So if I call it afterwards.
Well, if it's already happened and you're past that hole, you can't call it. It already happened.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
So the person is an illegal.
Well, drop. I take that back.
Perfect.
It could be called later, but it's hard. When I think about day to day, you're playing in your local club,
right?
If you don't call it then, there's no point in trying to call it later because
they did that on the PGA.
People can call it video, in from TV because they've got video proof.
I got you. Okay.
Now they actually stopped doing that on tour. They used to be they had a couple, I know.
Yeah,
a couple
like
years
Merle
ago.
From like people, Tulsa, yes, Oklahoma could
call
calls
in and says,
his ball moved.
His ball moved.
Ball moved.
So, which I thought was ridiculous.
By the way, from Oklahoma had the same voice from you and from me. I don't know how Merle sounded the same.
Clearly, we've both been to Oklahoma.
Ball moved. I want Merle on the podcast.
That's right.
Absolutely. His ball moved.
Well, but back to the question at hand, for me personally, usually the way I handle it is I try to do everything I can to prevent someone from breaking a rule if I can. And when I say that, I usually approach them with, I see them getting ready to drop incorrectly, I go, hey, here's how you need to drop this. Just so you know, I don't know if you know or not. I'm just pointing it out.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those things where I don't like to call a rules infraction, but I'm going to. If they're going to argue with me about it, and I know the rule, then, you know, I'm going to call them on it.
Do most people say thanks? Do most people
usually?
You know,
yeah.
I find it very difficult to do that, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because of my level of play. Maybe it's just because it comes across as icky or
one of the things I usually do, especially if I'm playing. Well, it depends. So if I'm at like my local club and I'm just playing around on the weekend, I will, if they are questioning whether I'm giving them the right ruling, if I know the rule, I'll just say, hey, just call the pro shop and ask them. And they'll give you a ruling, a proper ruling.
And this is typically, if it's tournament play, obviously tournament play, you're going to want to say something. Or
if it's just the weekend choose up or whatever, if you can't come to an agreement on that, then.
But you'll say it every time. You'll tell somebody every single time, hey, you're making a rules infraction.
No.
Okay. You're not read your rule book, but you're at least
there. If it's
there.
In tournament play, I will.
Okay.
If it's weekend play or whatever, I don't care.
And do you care that if that person finds that annoying? Because maybe it's something really small, because golf is full of small rules. That's full of these weird little things. Does it affect you mentally or personally that person might look at you as kind of a jerkwad?
In tournament play? Right. No, I don't have any problem calling somebody on it. And most people that I know that have played competitively, they have no problem doing it either. And if they're playing competitively, they probably know the rule, or if they have a different interpretation in their mind, they're just going to go, they're just going to ask for a rules official. But like weekend play, or if it's like your local tournament or something that's not governed by, say, your state golf association, then I just tell them to call the pro shop and have them make the ruling.
See, that was a better question this time, wasn't it?
It was.
Are you proud of me?
Good job, buddy.
Thanks, man. It means the world to me that you're proud of me. And if you're if we're out there playing golf and you make rules infraction, I'm not gonna tell on you. Because that's what friends do.
Okay.
Okay? And you need to know that. But unless it's for money.
They're not all my friends.
Most of them aren't. Most of them aren't. It's the Stick and Hack Show. That's Stick, Mike Ryan. I'm Adam Grubb, the Hack. And we appreciate you coming into the program. StickandHack.com and follow at Stick and Hack for stories, merchandise, weekly newsletter, The Break. Sign up for it all. This is bringing you the stories of golf for you to enjoy between rounds. The most sophisticated and brilliant show about golf in the free world. This is the Stick and Hack Show. You guys have a great week. Thanks for listening.
All right. Peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.